This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, we're seeing an increase in the number of migrants coming from North Africa into these Spanish enclaves, particularly because the route between Libya and Italy has slowed down considerably in recent months.
That's Josephine McKenna reporting. Full details coming up.
Also, Kenyans voted today in the country's second presidential election. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres traveled yesterday to the town of Bangusu in CAR to pay tribute to UN troops who've died there. And U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley, is visiting a displaced persons camp today in the DRC.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Kenyans voted today in the country's second presidential election. However, turnout appears lower than it was for the August 8th poll, and violent protests have erupted in some opposition strongholds. Security issues have forced voting in several areas to be delayed until Saturday. The Supreme Court had ordered a rerun of the first poll, citing irregularities it blamed on the country's Electoral Commission. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Jacob Maina cast his vote in Dagoretti, an area of Nairobi that is considered a ruling party stronghold.
Things were good, actually cool, but the people didn't show up like last time.
A poll worker in Nairobi's Mathare slum said that out of 656 registered voters at that location, only about 50 people came to vote between 6 a.m. and 11 a.m. Thursday. She said that during the August election, more than 200 voters cast ballots during the same period. Opposition leader Raila Odinga instructed his supporters to boycott this election after his demands to delay the vote and replace members of the Electoral Commission were turned down. President Uhuru Kenyatta, the winner of the first election, which the Supreme Court nullified, said Thursday that 90% of the country is calm, is peaceful, and is voting. He also said the rights of both those who choose to vote and those who choose to boycott should be respected. Kibera resident Silas Odwali Omuse used a football analogy to explain his decision not to vote.
But where one team goes to play and the other one is not playing, then that one is not a match. I can go and watch. That's why I avoided to participate.
Frederick Mondi Otieno says he did not vote because his preferred candidate was not participating. He says there is no voting because there is no president to vote for. Although the majority of polling stations were peaceful, some were not. In the western city of Kisumu, in Odinga stronghold, many polling stations did not open for security concerns, with protesters setting up roadblocks and lighting fires. One man died from gunshot wounds, and three others were wounded. In the Nairobi slums of Kibera and Mathare, police fired tear gas and protesters threw rocks. One man was shot dead in Mathare. Amnesty International said its researchers witnessed at least 12 young men in Kibera trying to block the entrance to a polling station, with police firing tear gas to disperse them. And in the Mombasa slum of Bangladesh, youth smeared feces on the walls of a polling station and chased away election workers until order could be restored. The majority of Kenya's coastal region was peaceful as of mid-afternoon Thursday. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
As reported, police and opposition supporters have had running confrontations throughout the day in Kisumu, Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga's hometown. Mohamed Yusuf is in the city reporting for VOA. He spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson just after he visited the city's main hospital.
The hospital, we have seen injured people with gunshot wounds. So far, four.
Who was doing the shooting?
I think there was this running battles that was taking place within the city between the police and some protesters.
So the protesters were trying to block voting.
Yes, block voting. Yeah, exactly.
At this point, have there been any deaths reported in the city?
So far, the doctors told us that there is only one person who was brought with gunshot wound and died while undergoing treatment at the hospital, at the main hospital.
How are conditions otherwise in the city?
There's still some pockets of protests taking place within the city. A while ago, I was just not far from where I am at the moment. There was running battles between the protesters and the police, and you could hear gunshots, and that what was taking place just close to me at the moment. But most of the part is really hard at the moment to move within the city because roads are blocked and there are youths all over the streets and roads.
What was voting like in the city? Was there any voting at all?
There was no voting. What we have seen, we visited several polling stations. There were no activities. There was nothing going on. And we went to the main constituency center where there was planning and where the polling material was supposed to be distributed from to the polling centers. And by the time we were there, up to four or five, there was nothing going on. And polling materials were not distributed, and we getting reports from Nairobi that the head of the Electoral Commission has ordered a repeat of the election, for example, in Kisumu on Saturday, and close towns like Siaya and Migori and Homa Bay.
Those are all part of Mr. Odinga's stronghold, I take it.
That's correct. That is the main opposition, Raila Odinga's stronghold in part of in Nyanza region.
Does the city seem like things are going to settle down for the evening, or could things get worse today?
Not really. So far, it's about sunset, maybe 30 minutes before the sun goes to sleep. And there's still that engagement between the police and the youths. And by the announcement this evening, this afternoon by the Electoral Commission that the election will go on Saturday, that increases more tension, and probably many people fear that there will be deaths and even injuries before it may be tomorrow. I assume the protests will go on.
That was Mohamed Yusuf covering the election protests for VOA in Kisumu, Kenya. He was speaking with Kate Pound Dawson.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres traveled yesterday to the town of Bangassou in the Central African Republic to pay tribute to UN troops who've died there. AFP reports that Guterres observed a minute of silence and laid a wreath in memory of peacekeepers who lost their lives in the last year. Bangassou is a predominantly Christian town of 35,000 people and one of the areas in the Central African Republic worst hit by violence. 76 civilians and 6 UN troops were killed in there after a so-called self-defense militia known as the Anti-Balaka mounted an assault on May 13th on other armed groups. Guterres later returned to the capital, Bangui, and spoke to victims who have claimed sexual abuse by UN peacekeepers. According to AFP, this was part of an effort by Guterres to address damaging allegations that have hit the UN in several missions.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley is visiting a displaced persons camp today in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Haley arrived in the DRC yesterday after visiting South Sudan, where she had tough words for President Salva Kiir. In Juba, she said she told Kiir the time for action is now for his government to end the civil war and take care of South Sudan's people. She told local journalists that the U.S. has lost trust in Kiir's government. A South Sudanese official told VOA that Kiir and Haley had fruitful discussions about revitalizing the peace deal and humanitarian access. In the DRC, Haley is expected to push President Joseph Kabila to agree on a timetable for elections. Kabila refused to step down at the end of his term last December, which led to new violence in the country.
About 198 undocumented migrants from Morocco and sub-Saharan Africa were intercepted on 9 dinghies in the Strait of Gibraltar and the Alboran Sea off the Spanish coastline recently. A growing number of migrants are using Morocco as a launchpad for a new life in Europe, entering through Spain, which is only 10 miles across the sea. Thousands are succeeding. In fact, irregular migration from Morocco is surging, alarming Spanish authorities and European border officials. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about this increasingly popular migration route.
Well, we're seeing an increase in the number of migrants coming from North Africa into these Spanish enclaves, particularly because the route between Libya and Italy has slowed down considerably in recent months. Now, about 400 migrants arrived aboard about 20 boats in the last few days. Moroccan security forces were also deployed around the border on Tuesday morning after 50 migrants from sub-Saharan Africa tried to clamber up fences in a bid to get to Spain through the Tarajal border crossing. So we're seeing this increased activity. On Saturday, about 198 undocumented migrants of Moroccan and sub-Saharan origins were also intercepted on dinghies in the Strait of Gibraltar and the sea off Almeria. So this is really quite a big trend that we're seeing as migrants are still desperate to get to Europe.
You know, it seems like the migrants now are hoping to use this route from Morocco as a launch pad to begin new lives in Europe going into Spain, which, as you mentioned, is only about 10 miles across the sea. I understand this is alarming the Spanish authorities.
Yes, indeed. And the migrant centers are apparently quite overcrowded in southern Spain. And we've even heard reports that they're close to collapse because of the influx. Since the beginning of October, at least 1,000 migrants have arrived in the Andalusia region, and the temporary holding centres seem to be full to capacity. We've also seen migrants abandoned. Spanish Guardia Civil divers recovered a corpse near the Melilla port of a young man the other day who drowned after the boat he was travelling in with around 24 other people was abandoned at sea by traffickers. So this new route is of concern, and no doubt the authorities will be monitoring the movement of migrants very closely, and particularly the concern too about the traffickers themselves, who appear to have no concern about the fate of these migrants and no trouble about abandoning them in the middle of the Mediterranean in very difficult conditions.
Is there any count yet on the number of children that are involved in this particular route?
Haven't seen any figures on the number of children involved, but in the past year, over 10,000 undocumented migrants have arrived on Spanish coast. In 2016, fewer than 6,000 had arrived for the whole year. So that gives you some idea of the increase that we're seeing. And the numbers are still far below the migrant flows that we've seen in Italy from Libya, the main concern for the EU and other European countries. But European officials are worried about the increase in this route. Frontex, the European border agency, has described its concern about what it calls a steady increase in irregular migration across the Western Mediterranean route. The authorities will be watching this route very closely. And it's unusual, too, that even so late in the year, there's no sign of a slowdown in the numbers that really want to reach Europe.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna speaking with me from Rome.
Ugandan authorities are working to control the recent outbreak of the Marburg virus. It was recently reported in an eastern Uganda district, Queen, at the border with Kenya. A number of contacts have been identified and are currently under strict surveillance. Isolation units have also been set up in two districts to handle any suspected cases. VOA's Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Following the declaration of Marburg outbreak in Uganda, Uganda's Ministry of Health has dispatched a rapid response team to investigate and assess the magnitude of the disease. The outbreak was declared after the Uganda Virus Research Institute confirmed that a 50-year-old woman from Kwen District in eastern Uganda had died from the virus. Similar to Ebola, another hemorrhagic fever, symptoms of the illness include nausea, red eyes, fever, severe bleeding, and organ failure, which leads to death. A team of highly experienced epidemiologists and other medical experts has so far identified 155 people who were in contact with the deceased. Benjamin Sensasi is the spokesperson, World Health Organization, WHO, and also part of the team in Kwen District. He says the identified contacts are being watched for any signs and symptoms of Marburg disease.
We are doing active surveillance and active case search in Kwen to find all the people who possibly had contact with a confirmed case, so that in case they develop any symptoms, we are able to evacuate them to the treatment center that we have set up at Kaproron Health Center for. In case they are sick, they will be treated here and managed until they are okay.
Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's Minister of Health. She says the contacts are highly at risk of contracting the disease and such have to be fully examined as measure to control its spread.
Once the first person gets infected with the Marburg virus, human-to-human transmission then occurs through contact with the body fluids of already infected persons. Close contacts to the already infected persons, like close family members and health workers, are particularly at risk of getting infected with the Marburg virus.
Acheng has advised the public to take extra caution while dealing with any person who shows Marburg-like symptoms.
Avoid direct contact with body fluids of a person presenting with bleeding tendencies or symptoms suggestive of Marburg virus disease. Regular hand washing is required after visiting patients in hospital, as well as after taking care of patients at home. Avoid contact with persons who have died from the disease.
Uganda is prone to Marburg outbreaks, and this is the fifth so far since 2007. Miriam Nanyunja is the officer in charge of disease control and prevention at WHO. She attributes the recurrence of the disease to caves in some parts of the country which harbor Marburg-carrying African fruit bats. It can also be spread by bat feces and by butchering and eating animals, including monkeys, that are infected. It can also be spread by using infected needles that have not been sterilized. She, however, notes that if 42 days pass without any new cases, the country will be declared free from the disease.
So this outbreak would be declared over if after two transmission periods of 21 days, there are no new cases. And this is 42 days from the death of the last case or from the discharge or turning negative of the last case. So right now, if we do not get any other case, then we will count 42 days from the death of the last confirmed case, and then we'll declare this outbreak over.
The Marburg virus disease is a severe type of viral hemorrhagic fever which affects both humans and non-human primates like monkeys and baboons. It has no specific treatment or cure. Scientists treat it with supportive measures like replacing lost blood, preventing dehydration, and maintaining a good oxygen supply. There are no home remedies for the infection. According to WHO, it can result into large outbreaks with high case fatality rates of between 23 to 90%. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. U.S. officials are considering a larger campaign in Africa to pursue Islamic State fighters. The move comes after ISIS lost its de facto capital, Raqqa, in Syria. General Joseph Dunford, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, has said ISIS has aspirations to establish a larger presence in Africa. He says that from Libya to Egypt's Sinai to West Africa, the jihadists already pose a threat. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi also warns that the defeat of ISIS in Syria and Iraq would send a flow of terrorists into his country, Libya, and West Africa. Patrick Dunleavy is a senior fellow at the Investigative Project on Terrorism. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi about what should be done to counter the spread of ISIS on the African continent.
I think it's extremely credible based on two, maybe three different things. One is historically returning mujahideen sometimes go to their home countries, other times they go to where they think they have the best success rate to impact. Right now, and we look at the situation that happened in Niger with the U.S. forces there, that shows us that the United States, as well as other countries, are concerned with Africa being susceptible to threats from terrorism, particularly from Daesh, from ISIS, or Al-Qaeda in particular. So I think President Sisi is extremely on point in noticing that this is going to be an upcoming threat.
Which is more vulnerable to penetrate, Sinai, Libya, or West Africa?
I believe right now, West Africa. I think the Sinai, between the Egyptian government and the Israelis, there may be more of a security threshold that they've established there, working together, both Egypt and the Israelis. But in regard to West Africa, we see a lot of instability in certain countries. Again, I go back to the Niger attack. The whole reason that the U.S. forces were there, special forces training other African military organizations, was because they see it as the most vulnerable, West Africa.
The Egyptian president said his forces destroyed 1,200 trucks loaded with weapons and fighters crossing from Libya over the past 3 years. Would Egypt be able to prevent terrorists across a 1,200-kilometer border?
I think that's extremely difficult. You're talking about a large border. You're talking at some places where they are very porous. In regard to groups like Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad that are using tunnels to get military equipment and other resources into the Sinai or over there. The Sinai has been a challenge for the Egyptians. I think the rest of the border in regard to Libya and stuff like that, they're going to need assistance. They're going to need assistance from the international community, whether it's by providing the electronic surveillance or drones or with other assets. I think they're going to need help there.
Final question. What should regional and international players do to prevent the spread of ISIS fighters into the African continent?
Well, the first thing they have to do is there has to be a consensus in the international community as to how we are going to treat returning ISIS fighters. Right now, there's a huge, huge difference in a spectrum of how we're going to treat these fighters. You look at countries in the European Union, where Denmark is thinking of coming up with some sort of welcome home committee. Others are talking about the fact that we're going to try to de-radicalize the individual. So there's some lack of unity into how to actually deal with returning fighters. Are they criminals? Should they be prosecuted? Should they be monitored? I think that until we come to that consensus as to how to deal with them and the threat, we're going to be only biding time before a major attack takes place.
That was Patrick Dunleavy, a senior fellow at the Investigative Project on Terrorism and a former New York Deputy Inspector General in the Criminal Intelligence Unit. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.